Good morning and welcome to Being the Change Now. Good morning, Sherry. Seems we've lost Sherry. Hang on a second, folks. All right. Good morning, Sherry. Sherry?
Hello? Yeah.
Yes, we can hear you.
Good morning.
All right. Our assignment for the week. This week, we practice seeing the way life sees. We practice being Tanzan, the awareness that is aware of the Buddha nature of all things. Notice how this perspective reflects all without judgment, how a perception of oneness gives rise to respect, tolerance of differences, even reverence. Notice how inclusion is a given if all is inherently the same thing. Notice acceptance is a function of life seeing itself as it is. If it is challenging to see the Buddha in the other human being, begin by noticing the mirrored examples of Buddha nature in nature and follow the projection home. Notice, in contrast, ego's rigidity of perception, its eagerness to condemn, blame, exclude. Notice how its limited morality only serves to reinforce ignorance of Buddha nature, of ourselves and all beings. As always, RL. All right. Here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, it's Anna from Seattle.
Hey, Anna.
Hi.
What you seeing?
I'm seeing oh gosh, one moment. I want, of course, would love to see everything how life sees it, and I'm constantly in grasping, and it's always about, as you all probably by now know, about, you know, some relationship, or when I'm not in a relationship with a man, then constantly grasping for that, or not really feeling that wholeness within myself, you know.
Not really feeling what, Anna, in yourself?
That wholeness, complete.
Ah, right. Yes. And you won't. You won't, as long as that process is happening, right?
Yeah.
So if I say, you know, I will only be happy if I can have champagne and caviar every day. I can only be happy if I have champagne and caviar every day. That's the only way I can be happy. That's what I need. That's what I want. That's what's going to make me happy. I know if I could have that, I had it. And so I know that that's the thing. Now, what do you think my chances are to be happy without champagne and caviar every day?
No.
That's exactly right. Not at all, right? Because I am affirming that I can only be happy under these conditional circumstances, and those conditional circumstances keep not being something that is happening for me. So looking at that process enables us to step out of it. But, truly, you know, we get what we ask for in life. And if I'm asking for, I can only be happy under these circumstances. I am going to be unhappy under these circumstances. If that's what I'm affirming, that's what I'm focusing on, that's what I'm asking for, that's what I'm going to have.
Hmm.
Yeah, it just works that way.
So can I quickly ask one question? So that man I had been dating for several months. So it feels, we get really close, and then it feels that he basically, on another day, doesn't really care about me. He doesn't say that, but it's just in our communication.
Well,
Anna,
you're going back, and yes, we need to talk about this on open air at some point, but you're going back to content. It's focusing on the process. That's what's going to enable you to see it. When you realize the focus of my attention is constantly on this relationship, what's happening in this relationship, what's good with this, what's bad with this, how it's not. When you realize that that's the focus of your attention, then you'll realize that's why you have the life you have.
Well, actually, it wasn't about the content, my question. It was actually about, but I can call in about, it was about understanding if that's
No, it's about content. Trust me on this. It's about content. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huh.
And we can talk more.
Okay.
Thank you.
There's probably not going to be a New Year's retreat this year, is there? Or is, I can email
How about you take that one to the guest master?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Anna. Here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Hello? Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
This is Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, so sort of my most refreshing observation about the two masters' interaction was that the possibility that the one who drinks wine in the afternoon was not being sarcastic, that perhaps like to actually see yes in the strict and regimented one in the moment of frustration and anger, yet there still lies Buddha.
Mm-hmm. Yes, what you really appreciated from the story is that there is no sarcasm, there is no overlay in the react. There's no reaction, right? There's the ability to just simply witness it, not to get affected or ruffled by the other person's reactivity.
Yes. I had read that story before and probably filed it under witty retorts by people day drinking. Like it was a good comeback for the anger in your face. Like, oh, well, you don't want to have a drink? Fine, you must be a Buddha. And it's eye opening to see it as, even in your anger and frustration, or whatever else there might be, I'm able to receive you as the Buddha. As it's moving.
It is. Yeah. Because, that's so beautifully stated, right, Brian? Because there is a way in which people who are, within quotes, present can be witty and have a great comeback and remain unmoved by somebody else. But what you are projecting now on Tangzhen is truly the ability to see the Buddha nature of his colleague in his ruffled state. And that's a quality of acceptance that is truly powerful, truly moving, that it signals where the other person really is, right? From the place in which the Buddha nature of all things is my reality, and therefore, despite whatever the outward experience appearances might be, that's what I recognize and bow in you. bow to in you.
Yeah, and what I'm just appreciating about it, just hearing that, is just like how it basically pulls the rug completely out of the conditioning of that. Like, so there's a conditioned interpretation and sort of this conditioned belief that if you say the right thing, you put someone in your place, that you should always know how to do that. And that's what this was an example of. And the conditioning and the ego design, sort of knowing that, like, well, that's just all ego just as much as being indignant about being offered a drink in the afternoon is ego, it seems.
Uh-huh.
And just like, yes. It yanks the ego out of all the expectations. It just yanks the rug out from it. There's nowhere for it to stand with its expectations.
That's right. Because you're recognizing both sides of the duality as ego. Whether you have the wherewithal to have a comeback about somebody, or you actually have the more obvious ego place is one of frustration, being offended at being offered a drink if you're a practicing Buddhist. Both of those are conditioned, but there's that place of that third place that you're pointing us to, where there's true recognition of the Buddha nature of all things, which just completely pulls out all of the interpretations, conditioned interpretations of the situation.
Yeah, and I think just like the sense of Sangha or all one or no separation in it, like if it's okay for either of those beings to be the way they were in that story, in that space, maybe it's okay for this being to be the way he is in this space also. Like, there doesn't have to be separation. It's just a story about separation.
Yes. There's a story about separation. There isn't that separation. And I project a slight refinement in what you just said, right, Brian, because what you're actually pointing to is, yeah, you could be either one of those monks in personality, but really what we are, when you say it's okay for us to be who we are, it's pointing to the authenticity that is who we are, not necessarily the personality. Yes, we get identified with either of those places, and the voice in our head is supposed to beat us up about both. You can't have a drink in the afternoon, and you are drinking in the afternoon, or you don't have a comeback for somebody who's coming at you with anger, and you react with anger, and all of those situations are held in a context of there's something wrong with all of them. And what you're pointing to is everything is fine the way it is, and it's possible to be the being that you are rather than the personality that is constantly being condemned.
Yeah, the just like, I guess what I hear is like that highlights, or again, what shines through is that, the suffering is not required. It's not just the way it is. I mean, there is suffering for sure, without question, but, I just project so much suffering over not having a drink in the afternoon, And I have experienced that myself, so I know what that's like. And so, so where is that Buddha nature? It's everywhere. It's here too, which is not something the story wants this person to experience.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Precisely. The story does not want to experience yourself as who you are. It always is pointing to who you're not. So we just rest with who we are.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.
There are a couple of things about this story for me. One is we have to be careful about throwing around the word master. Lots of people would like to own that title, but often they are the ones who are least, who shouldn't, who shouldn't claim that title. The only way that we can see Buddha nature is to be Buddha nature, right? Mm-hmm. And so in our practice, that's what we're doing constantly. is attempting to get to our authentic experience of being the Buddha nature, that is the Buddha nature of all that is, rather than having an idea about what Buddha nature is or what we are or anything else. Because to me, the power in that little story is that as soon as we are coming from Buddha nature, it is obvious that everything is Buddha nature. But it's a non-dual perception. It's not something we're ever going to get to in a dualistic world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A non-dual perception that is never going to be arrived at in a dualistic world.
That's right. So for the one chap, everything is conditional. I've been looking, as we've been looking at this, you know, morality is such an interesting issue. And if you stop and think for just a moment how much money there is in morality, I think it goes a long way to explaining why it's such a big deal. How much money and power reside in the issue of morality. And then, you know, when we can consider that, I think it can help us not try to figure out what is moral and what isn't moral, but to realize that's just two sides of a duality, the way ego is always operating in two sides of a duality. And where do we need to be in order to see that? That's where we want to get to.
That field that Rumi talks about.
That's right. Out beyond right and wrong. And it doesn't mean, nobody is saying, and so start drinking at breakfast.
Right.
That's not the point either. Yeah.
No. Yeah. All right, here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Tom from Arizona.
Hello, Tom. What are you seeing?
Well, I'm seeing exactly what's happened in the last few conversations, I think. But even this last week, it's just been so enjoyable to see everything as Buddha. The easiest places is with actual other human forms who help me move forward with, you know, seeing my own ego. And what I'm seeing that's really subtle after that, and I'm sure I've seen this before, and I know it's somewhere in my recording, is that once I see them as Buddha, ego's next step is, well, that's good, or, wow, why didn't you see that before? And it's right back into non-Buddhiness.
Yes, yes. Well, and that's good. That's good to see, right? Because ego is always in non-Buddhiness, right? ego is constantly trying to make a case for what's wrong, right? And so if you're going to start seeing everything as the Buddha, well, you can't do that. And so that's one of his favorite ploys, right? Okay, well, great, Tom, but why didn't you see this before? Do you realize how much of your life you've wasted to eat, right?
And the next step is, wow, well, you know, you've spent this amount of years, and I think I'm saying the same thing you just said, but you spent this amount of years being non-Buddha. Come on.
Right.
You know, why are you even, why even the effort of the last, you know, whatever, third, half
few
of
decades.
Your life.
You got these few decades left. Is it really worth making that effort to realize what you authentically are? Come on.
It's so ridiculous once we say it out loud. It's like, okay, I'm going to give up these last few decades. of joy or happiness, right, or learning or yeah, just being present.
Yes.
So ego, what? So ego.
So I can suffer with ego.
Yeah.
Basically, it's what it comes down to.
And to say it like that is just so ridiculous. And yeah, how anybody could ever choose that or believe that or be suckered by that. I don't mean anybody. I mean me.
All of us.
Yeah. Well,
all of us, right? How could? Yeah. Well, I think I can speak for all of us, okay? Because I've known a lot of all of us doing this process, and it comes down to the same thing that you just said. As long as it only happens inside our head, we can believe the most bizarre things. It's only when we hear it out loud, say it out loud, say it to the recorder, say it in a situation like this, and we hear it and go, well, that's stupid. That would be a good application for the word stupid. And it is a good application because we have to be completely stupefied, mesmerized, hypnotized, brainwashed by ego in order to even be open to such nonsense.
Yeah,
we are. And, we can be.
We are. And where my ego wants to go is, well, you're stupid, but that's not what you're saying at all.
No,
that
no.
First noble
ego
truth
is stupid.
Yeah.
Ego, ego
first noble
is
truth.
Stupid. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then just one last thing. So I butt up against other people's when I'm present, I can see it's like, okay, that's suffering. That's ego. I recognize that because I go through it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is an ego ploy, and I'm sure you have a short, concise answer for this. But if there is any effort to fix or show them how their ego's working or, you know, get them on board, that's probably not the way to go.
Not the direction either. Yeah.
Okay.
Because, of course, that's just reinforcing ego. It's going to give ego a job to do, right? Okay, now I got somebody to fix. Which is why, you know, in our practice, we're just always focused on, no, it's this person's suffering. It's this person, this human being. This is who we're here to save. Everybody else, they're fine. And as soon as I'm fine, I'll realize they're fine, just like Tanzan, right? It's getting to that place of non-duality in which there is only that which is, only Buddha nature, only wisdom, love, and compassion. When we're in that place, then we can see that everybody else is too, whether they know it or not.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
I'm going to take one last little risk here because it feels like a risk to ego. But Sherry, I love you. And thank you for everything.
Well, thank you. And I can say with great heartfelt sincerity, I love you too.
Thank you, Sherry.
All right.
Go happy.
Go happy.
Thanks, Dom. Oh, that moved me to tears, Sherry. Well, here we go. We have time for enough next caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Erin in Massachusetts.
Hey, Erin.
Well, so I, what rattled around in my head was, if everything is the Buddha, then the Bodhisattvas are also the Buddha. And I've always sort of identified the Bodhisattvas as things that are challenging to me. And, I get to notice, why is this challenging to me? Like a situation or a person. And I get to sort of run through some of my beliefs and assumptions and notice, you know, why a certain situation is challenging to me. So anyway, that's sort of so I've had a few Bodhisattvas this week, and it's such a nice thing to turn it in that direction instead of double down on the, this is tough or why is this person doing this thing, but instead being like, wow, okay, fascinating. What am I learning here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that notion that everything that is in life, the notion that everything, not even the notion, right? The statement that everything is Buddha nature allows us to see what what is challenging as simply opportunities to learn. And Aaron, there's an important point that you're making, which is it's not challenging for Buddha nature, it's challenging to ego. And that really is the switch that the Bodhisattva facilitates.
Mm-hmm.
Only when I'm identified with ego, when I'm not identified with Buddha nature, is something challenging. And so the reframing is really everything is the Buddha nature, so everything is the Buddha nature. And so I get to see that I'm identified with something that doesn't see Buddha nature, which is why it's challenging.
Thank you for pointing that out, actually, because that's helpful as I sort of, you know, I think about a certain scenario. I'm, you know, the human in front of me that I'm, and I have all this, like, why are you doing this and not that? All that whole story is, it's just like an ego story around the way any one thing should turn out or any one person should behave. And that the should is sort of the part to challenge.
Yes, because that framework of all the bodhisattvas are challenging is the way we see the world through conditioned mind, right? Mm. The object, that person, that circumstance, that event is the challenge, and I am attempting to be equanimous or a spiritual human being relative to the challenge, but that thing is challenging. Rather than when we step out and disidentify, we actually see the actual, within quotes, problem is the identification, not the person or the circumstance. But as long as I'm identified, I'm always the victim of. The object
right.
is always
right.
the source of, rather than, oh, wait, the thing that needs to change in order for my experience to be different is the me that I'm identified with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Like sometimes I can be so deep in it, I can't see that. And then sometimes it's like, maybe to use a word, like less triggering, so I can just get a glimpse of that. I can see different scenarios, like how deeply I can see that.
That's right.
So that's like another level deeper, Ashwini.
Of course, because that's why it's a practice. Right? It's not that we come into this world inherently, I mean, we come into this world as Buddha nature, and we have a process of returning there, right, of forgetting it and remembering it. And in some places, the forgetting is deeper than the remembering. So I process through that, right? I keep encountering those challenging circumstances until I could get to the place where I'm no longer triggered. I've disidentified from it so often that I can see that distinction. So absolutely, there's an acceptance of the process that we're all in, which is waking up. Mm-hmm. And some places are harder than others.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To make that switch. But I would project, right, Aaron, it's your experience, that places that seemed impossible before practice, you can actually see that now. But that's because you're training yourself to do that. So you can see the trajectory of transformation, which is what motivates us to keep going.
I can, yeah. Well, it's exciting because it just gets better and better all the time.
Precisely, yes. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Hey, can I tell a little Bodhisattva story?
Of course.
All right. So, and people who have been around for a long time know this story, but there are people who haven't been around for a long time, and they might not know this story. So there's a desert. There's a desert. It's the Sahara. You know, it's vast. And these four folks are making their way across this desert, and they've been slogging a lot. Well, slog implies water, which there isn't, but if you can slog in sand. And they've been going, and they've been going, and they've been going, and they've been going. And suddenly, they come across up on this wall. And it's tall, and it's wide. They look all the way to the left, and they can't see the end of the wall. And they look all the way to the right, and they can't see the end of the wall. And there it is. And it looks like, well, this is the end of the trail. But the first one decides to see if they can get up to the top and get over it. So the others help that one up, and that one gets up to the top and goes, ah! Ah! Gets this big smile and just dives over to the other side. Okay, second one, same process. They help this person, the others help this person up, sees what's on the other side, big grin, ah, and jumps over, right? Okay, the two who are down there still look at each other. Can we pull this off? So that the second one, you know, the last one puts the third one up onto the wall, and same thing happens, but the third one at least reaches around and grabs the last one to pull that person up to the top of the wall before going over. Okay? So here's this last person gets up to the top, and from the view from the top, it's paradise. It is beyond the Garden of Eden. It is the land of milk and honey. It is everything anybody has ever wanted for their entire life. And this last person is ready to jump, and what drops in is all the other people who might be coming across that desert, who won't know what's on the other side and will need somebody. So that last person climbs down from the wall and goes back across the desert looking for the people who are going to encounter the wall. That person is a bodhisattva too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
We've all met lots of those. And for those, we can be as grateful as we can be for the difficult bodhisattvas. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Thank you for that indulgence.
Those are the blessings of love and respect, Sherry, who gone before us.
For all.
Yeah.
Yeah, who have gone before us and opened the doors of wisdom for us.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Ashwini. Thank you, everybody.
Go happy.
Go happy.